Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the Tuesday, September 15th edition of the RotoWire NFL Podcast. Week one in the books. It's Joe Bartle, Jake Letarski giving you all the waiver wire edition for week two, getting you set for your primetime matchup. And it's a big one. There's a lot of running back injuries already. We had a couple wide receivers burst out as well. Some tight ends too that I think are going to be valuable pickups. This is going to be a pretty chock full episode of guys that you need to pick up, like week one always is.
Yeah, I mean, the goal, like we have in past years, is we want to get you pretty much all the names that are out there. You know, there are going to be some chalk pickups that are 30-40% that are going to be long gone and first come, first serve waivers, that type of thing. But we want to start with those regular guys and then hopefully move down the list to some flyers where even if you're in your 20-team double flex league, that maybe you can get some utility out of. So it'll vary a little bit week to week. You know, we always have a little bit of a varied list, but there are guys. Hopefully you listened last week, because I know a ton of the wide receivers that we talked about last week are going to come up again, but there are a lot of new running backs on the radar, some quarterback streamers, defense streamers. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, let's start first with the Monday Night Football action, just like we've had in the past couple of seasons. Two Monday Night games were occurring on the first week of the season. Chris and Jeff took care of most of the Sunday and Thursday action, but probably do some due diligence, at least wrapping up what occurred on Monday. Steelers won 26-16 against the Giants in that first matchup. We had a James Conner injury almost, on cue, it feels like, right? Benny Snell is probably the surprising thing out of this whole game. He was the one that carried the ball almost entirely with James Conner out. Anthony McFarlane was inactive for it, and that's a guy that I've liked quite a bit for that, but he didn't even end up playing because they had him set aside right away. Snell gets 19 carries, 113 yards. We had Juju Smith-Schuster catch two touchdown passes. Roethlisberger's arm, I can see where someone might have thought he was throwing like Philip Rivers. There was a bit more guiding of the throw than I've seen from him before.
It started a little bit slow, but it definitely improved as things went on. Of course, Juju got his touchdown catches. He looked like the perfect buy low candidate in drafts this year. Wouldn't be surprised seeing him sneak up into early second round next year. Of course, overreaction week one, we got to overreact to everything. But yeah, you're right. James Conner, apparently he's avoided the high ankle sprain, which is key. You know, he's not in a Mike Thomas situation, which Jeff and Liz covered pretty extensively here in yesterday's show. But because this is the Waiver Wire podcast, we do have to. I think there's one running back that fits our threshold. I like a little bit more than Benny Snell, maybe, but you know, don't want to spoil the whole thing now. But Benny Snell will be up there on Fab Bids this week. If you know, James Conner has to sit out, and you never know. Maybe they go to more of a timeshare, or maybe if Conner does go out there and play, he you know, he aggravates it or something like that early on. Benny Snell becomes one of the top overall pickups, definitely in the top three running backs, I'd say, this week. But we'll
yeah, top three. It. I was going to say there might be a second one that I'm more interested to, and it depends on the format out there. But I guess let's start. We'll talk about the other running backs. I mean, we're not trying to foreshadow yeah. anything, but let's start with Snell since we're on this, and it's a crucial aspect for fantasy picking up purposes this week. Mm-hmm. What are you looking to spend on Snell in a free agent, you know, pickup situation? Like, is this 50% of your budget, 40%? I know we don't have the tools out there quite yet to see where we're going with it, but it's somewhere in that range, right?
Yeah, in the end, even if Conner has to miss week two, it's still only a short-term ad in my eyes. You know, it's not like we're looking at the indie backfield and you're getting someone that's going to help you in week two and beyond for the rest of the season. So for me, I mean, it's going to depend on my situation. If I'm a Conner owner, I'm really only looking in the $16 to $18 range. It's not quite a blow half your budget type guy, because Conner will eventually come back. And I mean, even for a short term, they have Denver this week, and you know, they're eighth that's against true. The run. Yep. It's a team that's definitely incurred some injuries. But I mean, even looking last night, they did give up a pretty big total game to Derrick Henry, but 3.7 yards per carry, pretty respectable. 31 carries for 116 yards, kind of the perfect transition into this game. So basically, what I'm saying is, it's not a great week two matchup, and it's not a whole rest of season expectation. So you know, you spend 15 to 20% of your Fab budget and kind of roll with that from there. And that's what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Snell get thrown into that and just completely dominate the target, or I'm sorry, the carry share. The one saving grace out of that wasn't really catching the running back passes. They had a couple of guys that were factoring in Jalen Samuels as usual, right? What we'd anticipate, at least from last season, was around doing some things once James Conner was out. I don't know. Like, I watched that Titans Broncos game, and you're right. The Broncos handled Derrick Henry pretty well, but the game plan for the Titans is to stop Derrick Henry at all costs. Like, what do you do then when the Steelers offense is going to be a little bit more dynamic, or at least different than Derrick Henry? Does that open up space and opportunities for Snell? I don't know. He looked pretty shifty. I've always thought Snell was a plodding guy that can just get 3 or 4 yards and that's it. I felt like there was a bit more, I would say, athleticism in Monday night's performance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if AJ Bouye got hurt for the Broncos in the later game, so you know, if he has to miss some time, that Denver defense that, you know, we thought pretty highly of is starting to maybe creep down the rankings, and maybe Juju can go out there and have an excellent game once again.
Yeah, and then that would take away, of course, from Snell's opportunities to at least carry the ball. But I have to imagine you're favoring the Steelers again. They were favored against the Giants. You're favoring them again against the Broncos. And
Deontay Johnson looked good. Can I just note on that? He led the team with 10 targets, caught 6 for 57. He's, you know, he's nobody's Antonio Brown, right? But you can see in the way that they're using him that he is indeed kind of looking for that Antonio Brown role, short cutting routes, you know, that kind of thing, and things that he can break out for yards after the catch too. So, you know, I took a flyer. I mean, it wasn't even that much of a flyer taking him in, you know, 7th, 8th round kind of this year, I think. And, you know, he could pan out for these people, especially in PPR leagues.
James Washington looked pretty good too. All three of those wide receivers. It was ironic. I mean, I liked the Steelers offense coming into the season, and really they kind of did more or less what I anticipated they were going to do. Washington was more of the deep threat too, had a few sideline threats. Again, it was just Roethlisberger almost pushing the ball that made me just a little bit worried when I was watching that
game. Exactly. The difference is only 3 targets for James Washington to 10 for Deontay Johnson. So I think the pecking order here has been established.
Yeah, you're right. Quickly with the Titans-Broncos matchup, we talked about Henry getting his rushing yards like you'd anticipate. A.J. Brown, I have A.J. Brown just about everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I was desperately hoping we would get at least a little bit of points. And, you know, Tannehill does Tannehill things and overthrows the only touchdown A.J. Brown had towards the end of the game. So I was only crying on my couch for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is, you know, again, a possible wide receiver to look at, Corey Davis. We always knew the athleticism was there with Corey Davis. He caught 7 of 8 targets for 101 yards. Sorry. And that really kind of diminished A.J. Brown a little bit. But watching that game, there was just one play that worked every single time. It was just kind of a crossing route. Right. And Tannehill led him perfectly. It's something out of my Madden playbook. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with that. It's just like this one play that Denver could not figure out how to stop. And then, you know, losing members of their defense to injury at various points in the game, that only made things worse. But, you know, you could look, A.J. Brown would be pretty tied up, and then you'd have Corey Davis streaking across, you know, the middle of the field in that 15-yard general area, and it was a sure thing every single time, and it seemed like it was never quite adjusted to. So he had that going for him. You know, the broadcast points out, oh, it's a contract year for Corey Davis. Maybe he's mad they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. I'm sure his fifth-year option would have been pretty expensive. I think he was a first-round pick.
Yeah, oh, yeah, number 4 overall.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, a good player that's always had the pedigree. Now he's in another year with the system in Tannehill. He could be someone you look at the waiver wire, but am I worried about A.J. Brown long-term? No, I mean, A.J. Brown's a machine of a wide receiver, and he's going to find his way to the end zone.
Like I said, we would have had a salvaged fantasy day if Tannehill just didn't do Tannehill things. Anyway, threw 40 passes. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's the case, and you think Tannehill's throwing 40 passes every week, absolutely, Corey Davis should be somebody you pick up because Jonnu Smith, Smith and
they just
AJ
ran
Brown.
A lot of offensive plays. He attempted 43 passes and they had 34 run plays too. So
it was a typical Titans game as a controlling the tempo.
77 plays. You know, for perspective, I think what did Jacksonville run 50 plays this week?
And they won.
Yeah, and they won. So yeah, okay. The Denver side though, things got a little interesting for me. Of course, Cortland Sutton was inactive for this game. That meant Jerry Jeudy got a chance to lead the team with 8 targets. But I got to start on my early victory lap on Noah Fant here. He led the way there, 5 receptions, 81 yards, and the score. He looks good, and my biggest concern with him going into the season is Drew Locke going to be any good? And at least in the first half, at the parts that I was watching, you know, he had his moments. He didn't look exceptional, but he certainly looked serviceable enough for an athletic player like Noah Fant to get his targets. And of course, the fact that Sutton was out definitely helped both Fant and Jeudy. You get Sutton back in the mix, he's good for 6-7 of those targets, and then maybe the volume goes down a little bit. But you know, Fant in the red zone, Fant coming across the middle of the field, they've got some even on some kind of tight end screens, you know, you see that they've got plays designed for Fant.
That's exactly.
He's going to be, moving into, you know, the top 8 tight ends for me after this performance. He's someone that, you know, I took him as a backup and I paid a backup price, fortunately. But, you know, I had Kittle, for example. You know, he's someone right. that all of a sudden Fant will be starting in that league. You know, if I had Fant and Evan Ingram, even Fant and Hunter Henry, like all of a sudden Fant makes that leap for me. So, so far, you know, fingers crossed that, that he can keep it up.
Well, that was the whole thing I was going to say. The Broncos offense was very clearly designed to get Noah Fant and have his athleticism, and Drew Locke, for credit that he deserves, was able to capitalize it and make the plays. I think when Sutton returns, and it's possible he could return in week 2, we don't really know for sure what his status was given the late start for Monday's game. If he returns, that's going to cut into Jerry Jeudy's targets as opposed to Noah Fant. I think it's very clear that Fant is established and they want to get him involved in the offense. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. I was always TJ Hockenson over Fant. Exactly. And I think I still am. Hockenson actually looked really good against the Bears.
You want to see 5 targets for Tim Patrick or 8 targets combined between Tim Patrick and Deshaun Hamilton.
Right.
That's a lot of where the return of Sutton eventually comes into play.
Sutton, once he comes back, is not cutting into Fant at all. If Fant is available out there, man, it has to be like 18 leagues where he is. Pick him up. I think he's going to be a very credible starter in even shallow formats right now.
The other thing about this game, Melvin Gordon, too, is looking like he's going to live up to that ADP that he's had. What was it, around 4th, 5th round, maybe?
Yeah.
A little earlier
late,
than that.
Late 3rd, too.
Yeah, something like that. He looks like the number one guy. I mean, 15 carries to 7 for Lindsay.
Well, Lindsay got hurt. I mean, Lindsay got hurt okay, and so has an MRI on tap. I don't think there's results yet as of this recording, but it sounds like we're going to figure out what Lindsay's status is going to be. Tuesday or Wednesday. Right.
Yep.
Even still, I mean, that's exactly why you were drafting Melvin Gordon. I was drafting Philip Lindsay in round 9 because I thought the reverse would happen.
Yep.
But here we go.
Yeah.
Philip Lindsay's the one that's hurt. Gordon gets the majority of the
work. We do have to mention that it was on a reception, but Melvin Gordon did fumble the ball too.
Yes.
So I was thinking, oh boy, here we go. Now it's going to be the Philip Lindsay show. And then Lindsay goes and gets hurt. And, you know, I have no interest really in Royce Freeman. I didn't even list him in our running back, you know, ads.
There's a lot of other credible options. I mean, then that's kind of the part of this week 1. We already talked about Benny Snell. We'll get to the Colts guys as well. There's a few running backs, Malcolm Brown too, just get it out there right now, that you're going to want to pick up instead. But yeah, I think it's going to be Melvin Gordon's workload almost entirely, so long as Philip Lindsay's out. We just don't know his status yet as of this Tuesday morning Tuesday morning podcast. All right, woo, got through that. Before we get into the quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, I want to get a word from our one of our sponsors, Owner's Box. Do you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports? Live for the short-term gratification of DFS? Well, then be the first to try weekly fantasy sports. Owner's Box is here to change the game. Weekly fantasy sports keeps players engaged live through drafting, social interaction, and a new layer of strategy that puts the power back in your hands. No more submitting a lineup and forgetting about it. Users will be engaged throughout the entirety of the contest. Compete with your opponent over 7 days of fierce competition and get paid out weekly. The Owner's Box game provides users with a fun and engaging rule set that revolves around a number of game opportunities by roster position. Your players earn you points throughout the week, but only if you have enough games available at that spot. In addition, the Owner's Box platform will curate a community among their users and allow them to engage socially in multiple different ways. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. Go to ownersbox.com/rotoware and sign up for their exclusive beta right now. Each user who signs up will receive 100 Owner's Bucks free that can be used to enter contest risk-free. Again, ownersbox.com/rotoware. All right, so let's get to the quarterbacks. I think most of the podcast is going to be focused on the running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. Mm-hmm. But there are some streaming options at the quarterback position that I think we have to talk about. First and foremost starts with, I don't know, I don't want to say our boy, but Kirk Cousins really tore apart the Packers defense when they were down by 3 scores. Here he has a matchup against the Colts, who just made Gardner Minshew a top 15 fantasy quarterback despite throwing 20 times.
Yeah, so Kirk Cousins is 34% rostered in Yahoo League, so he's definitely out there and available. He was kind of at the fringe of maybe going as a backup quarterback in 12-team drafts, that kind of thing. Maybe he was dropped if he's your backup quarterback, you know, in an effort to get like a James Robinson or something like last week. So there's a good chance he's out there. Yeah, and like you said, at Indianapolis, Gardner Minshew threw more touchdowns than he did in completions, so the matchup at least seems a little bit savvy there. And I mean, Kirk Cousins looked pretty decent against Green Bay. He had he was the number 4 Pro Football Focus rated graded passer. So there's that, and of course, you know, the stat line isn't that bad too. Some of that, of course, in garbage time, of course, but 19 of 25 for 259 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 4 rushes for 34 yards. I mean, even without Stephon Diggs, the passing attacks seem to look fine. I mean, Green Bay's defense definitely has some holes in it. There's no doubt. But that Cousins stat line I put, he did it in under 19 minutes, like time of possession for the Vikings. And I think that was, I saw a tweet that might have been an NFL record since they started keeping track of time of possession. So given a very limited opportunity for Cousins, he actually had a pretty good game and he's moving forward to another good matchup. I could see him as a viable streamer in week 2.
Yeah, like, how much of that was really garbage time production as opposed to making the right reads and everything else? I mean, we saw Adam Thielen pile up the numbers late. There was a great throw over the top of the Packers defense that resulted in kind of a comeback touchdown. Yeah. But otherwise,
I mean, early in the game, they marched down the field.
But with Dalvin Cook running.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So I get concerned. I really thought, and you know this, we've talked about this plenty of times, I really think Justin Jefferson is going to be one of the best wide receivers of this class. And yet he was hardly a factor in it at all. We have BC Johnson do some things. There's no reason to be concerned about the Colts secondary right now. Again, Minshew was a top 15 quarterback on 20 attempts. We had DJ Chark, we had LaVisca Chenault, and somebody else also scored touchdowns. I just don't know if your passing offense is just singularly Adam Thielen and maybe Dalvin Cook. Like, what does that really look like in a competitive game? I don't see the Colts having the offensive firepower to get ahead. So if the game script for the Vikings to win is going to be running the ball and the game script for the Colts to win is running the ball, how many passing opportunities are really going to be there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's fair. So you're not so much on the same game. Phil Rivers is only 27%. He looks a little bit washed. So I don't know
about
that.
You're being nice. Good for you if it being a little bit washed.
Yeah, fair enough. To the point where I'm almost ready to cut bait with my Michael Pittman shares that aren't leagues where I have, you know, deep benches or it's a dynasty format. But yeah, Phil Rivers, 27% owned. He gets Minnesota. The only reason I write him on here is because, I mean, this Minnesota defense, the secondary in particular, you know, maybe they'll get, you know, some of their defensive line back, but the cornerbacks are dreadful. I mean, Xavier Rhodes, Trey Wayne's obviously gone. We talked about that last week when, you know, kind of targeting some Packer receivers for DFS. But, I mean, they made Aaron Rodgers look like the MVP again. And Rodgers was the number one graded out player on Pro Football Focus. And, of course, a lot of that credit has to go to Rodgers because Rodgers was piping these throws in on a dime, very accurate.
Right.
Obviously, we're not going to see that from Phil Rivers. But, I mean, Phil Rivers still has I mean, he's got some good offensive weapons that he can use and maybe take advantage of some of these cornerbacks as well if Minnesota fails to make the proper adjustments. So he's possibly in play as a stream, but you'd have to, I mean, you'd have to be picking between, like, I don't know who's all got bad matchups.
Well, that's what I was going to look at,
Garoppolo
too.
Right. Or Daniel, I don't know if Daniel Jones has a good matchup. He was actually okay. But if you're on the fringe cut line of quarterbacks in general, that's the only reason you think.
Okay, so this is one that I probably have to think about. Joe Burrow, who has a Thursday night matchup, prime time against the Browns, or
the over under on that game is going to be like 40, probably.
Yeah, see, and I watched the Joe Burrow game against the Chargers, and I didn't think he looked great, but there was a lot of athleticism, and the same reasons we like Josh Allen as a fantasy quarterback.
He's got that rookie Josh Allen in him where he might run around enough.
Yeah,
productive.
I think I'm going to lean Burrow here. Like, if there's ever a time for Joe Burrow to be a fantasy star in the first couple weeks, I really think this Browns defense might be. But that's one I imagine a lot of people might have to consider.
Yeah, I'd put Burrow ahead of Rivers for the upside factor, but then at the same time, probably below Cousins for the safety factor.
Okay, so how about, I mean, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater last week and ended up being a fantastic call, but how about his opposite person, Derek Carr, in that matchup? He's facing the Saints this week. Would you rather have Rivers, Cousins, or Carr?
Carr probably goes pretty much at the bottom of that against the Saints. Like, okay, so Tom Brady didn't look great, okay, but I'm not quite willing to admit that he's completely washed in the same way that Phillip Rivers is, because the New Orleans Saints defense probably doesn't get enough credit. Lattimore completely shut down Mike Evans, so that's basically one side of the field that's taken away if he can have another good game. So Carr probably goes to the bottom of that for me.
I'm right there with you. So that's kind of the line of demarcation for these streaming quarterbacks. We could also go with Gardner Minshew as well. Again, he had top 15 fantasy production despite throwing only 20 times. Looked pretty good and efficient, and that's kind of what you're looking for with Gardner Minshew, who was always going to be a quarterback too. He faces the Titans this week. I'm not sure you want to go against that Titans defense just yet, but there is always that garbage time production element that could factor in.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even though the Jags are clearly tanking, there's some good wide receivers in that group that he has got to throw for. So 26% owned, he's someone that, you could pick up as your second quarterback and maybe think about, maybe look ahead to when your primary quarterback has a bye and see what his matchup is and play it like that.
Is there any other quarterbacks that are possible streaming options that you're considering at the moment?
I mean, we're looking at two quarterback leagues at this point. You know, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater, 22%. He's got a tough matchup against Tampa Bay. Tyrod Taylor's only 8% and has got the Chiefs this week. You know, they look pretty good in the opener. The only thing with Tyrod Taylor is, you know, maybe he gets some garbage in there and can serve as a streamer in your two quarterback. And of course, you know, I'd have to go say Mitch Trubisky once without getting through this, but he's just as likely to get benched at halftime as he is to do what he did on Sunday again. Three touchdowns, you know, was good for those crazy DFS players, you know, that really wanted to roll the dice, but still only 55.7% completion rate and 6.7 yards per attempt, so nothing too crazy. I don't think he great. He was like 20 on the Pro Football Focus grade, so to put that in perspective, you know, by their metrics, if you're a buyer, both Joe Burrow and Tyrod Taylor had better games than Trubisky, so you know, still not in two quarterback leagues or ones where you have to be real deep with your streamers. You know, he's still not even that exciting.
I think it's definitely Cousins, and you can absolutely make a case for Rivers if you have to. But that's about as far as I'm digging into the streaming options. Mm-hmm. And again, you can tweet us, JB Fantasy Sports, at Roto Jake, if you have any of those quarterback lineup related questions.
Well, one last note to throw in here, Tua, 9%. At what point do we consider the spec ad there?
Not yet. I mean, they've already confirmed Ryan Fitzpatrick starting in week two. I mean, we know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. There's going to be turnovers. I mean, like, the fact that Devontae Parker could miss multiple weeks is a bigger concern to me as far as a spec ad for Tua than anything else. I mean, unless you are in a league that's really favoring rushing yards over passing, I just don't see
this
scenario.
And chances are, if you're in a two-quarterback league, guys like Tua and Justin Herbert could very well be rostered as spec ads for later on.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Let's move over to the running backs. There's a lot of big names out there, a lot of injuries. We already talked about Benny Snell. You had him number two. I actually have him number three, and I have him number three because Nyheim Hines is my number two, at least in pass-catching formats or PPR leagues out there. Marlon Mack, torn ACL, done for the season. I think it's already been confirmed Tuesday, but we were already anticipating that was going to occur Sunday. Hines got a few carries before Jonathan Taylor really ended up factoring in, scored one on the ground, one in passing. We know what Phillip Rivers can do as a quarterback. We just talked about him earlier. Well, he loves those pass-catching backs because he can't throw it more than 5 yards anyway at this point in his career. Hines, I think, actually is a guy that you like, all right, we draft Tariq Cohen or James White in rounds 8 or 9 for X reason. This is what Hines gives you, as I think, as a floor, especially now with Mac out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, JT's stock is – Jonathan Taylor's stock is the one that goes up the most, of course, with Mac out, because he's kind of your early down guy. But Hines, it goes up maybe not quite as much marginally to JT's, but it definitely goes up, and it makes Hines a – week in, week out, flex streaming option, especially in PPR leagues. I mean, he's only 20% owned, so chances are he's out there. He scored twice. I mean, that's something right there. And in the second half, Jonathan Taylor had 21 offensive snaps, and Hines had 20. So take half of that. I mean, the offensive line is, you know, they didn't necessarily show it in week one, but the offensive line is regarded as one of the better ones in the entire league. So he's got that going for him. I think they're really going to get the screen game going if Rivers might be as washed as we think he is. Just Hines across the board, especially when this team is behind, too. Hines is going to get most of the work. So there's a lot to like about him. I think a case could easily be made for him being the number one back. And if he's out there, I think you're going to need like a $22 fab bid.
Okay, so about 25% of your budget if you're a $100 one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you really, really, if you have to get him because you were a Marlon Mack owner or whatever, you were dependent on something like that, you know, you might have to pay a little bit more than that. But I think 22 is about as high as I'd be willing to go, because I think I might wait it out for a little more of a home run pick that pops up.
All right, well, let's talk about the other home run pick that really kind of creeped up out of nowhere, I feel like, but also there was reports of this occurring anyway. Malcolm Brown was the dude for the Los Angeles Rams on Sunday night against the Cowboys. He scored 2 touchdowns. He's only at 26% owned right now, and it's very clear that he's the starter over Cam Akers, 44 snaps to 24 snaps. Mm-hmm. He had basically all of the goal line carries as well, and was a factor on third down. There shouldn't be any reason Malcolm Brown makes this list week two, right?
He needs to be owned across the board.
But is he going to actually be fantasy relevant? I mean, we've had this conversation now, I feel like, multiple times last year when we were doing this podcast, and I'm not ready to be convinced Malcolm Brown is the guy. Are you ready to try and convince me?
Yeah, last year while Daryl Henderson was getting all the hype, I'm going back to 2019 draft seasons, I was like, well, maybe, you know, I'm not a huge Gurley believer. I'm not quite confident in his knees. Maybe Malcolm Brown's the guy. And, you know, it ended up Gurley having a decent year. Okay, I'll take it. So maybe I was a year too early on Malcolm Brown, but no, I'm definitely a believer just because of the usage to start with. 44 snaps to 24 for Akers, like you said. On third down, he had 8 third down snaps, and Akers only had 1 third down snap. And Daryl Henderson, who we would envision because of the player he is as maybe more of a third down guy, got 0 snaps on third down. I mean, Malcolm Brown definitely looks like the dude here. So gets both of the inside the five carries. That's a huge deal for me. And of course, he converted both for touchdowns, so there's no reason to think he won't continue to get those carries. So yeah, go for it. Malcolm Brown, absolutely. He might be one of your top pickups this week. I would say absolutely top three.
How would you rank him? Snell, Hines, Brown. I think it's almost undoubtedly the easy three pickups for this week, and people that probably are rostered above 50% as soon as next week.
Yep.
How do you feel comfortable with them with your budget? Like, would you want to get both if you want zero RB? Are you all in on Hines, Snell, and Brown, and just get every one of them and say, hey, sorry, Tevin Coleman, Rashad Vaughn, I don't know, like other kind of castaway dudes, you're out, and we're just going to go ahead and replace all three?
Yeah. So some of those guys on the drop list, you know, we can get to that towards a little bit, but
Rashad, it's a Keyshawn Vaughn, sorry.
Keyshawn Vaughn, yeah, the Tampa Bay. Daryl Henderson, of course, drop list. Kerryon Johnson, I'd even put on there. Marlon Mack, of course. Daryl Williams, there's no need to be hanging on to Devontae Freeman.
You know, actually, Freeman said he's considering 4 teams to sign for week 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
you're rolling your eyes. Yeah, all right.
Okay, so then he ends up with a couple weeks of like LeGarrette Blount type production.
Right.
You know, if that, remember, there's no camp and it's all limited this year. I think that for me, Hines and Brown are 1A, 1B. I'd lean towards Hines in a PPR and Brown in a standard. I think that's enough to break the tie for me. And I put Snell right behind because it doesn't look like Connor's injury is super severe. And Snell's kind of more of a short term, as where these other two guys could get you longer term. Though the thing is, with the reason I put Hines at 1A and Brown at 1B is because I think Akers could eventually at least level the playing field there. You know, it's not like Brown's going to be the top ultimate guy for the entirety of the season necessarily, unless he keeps playing like this. But I think Hines's role is safer for the rest of the season than Brown's, as good as Brown looked in week one.
I don't think you're the Rams and pass up Cam Akers for J.K. Dobbins unless you anticipate Akers can take the starting role away from Malcolm Brown. Fine, you can give the excuse for COVID camp for a reason why Akers has improved up his draft pedigree. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason you invested that highly in him over other running backs available if you didn't believe he could be the starting running back over Malcolm Brown. That's my thought process. So to me, Hines is number one is my pickup. I'm mm-hmm. still willing to invest 30 or 40% of my budget into Malcolm Brown because mm-hmm. even 3 to 4 weeks of a starting running back is 3 to 4 weeks yeah. that I can make it through. And we have mm-hmm. no idea what other injuries are okay. coming up and everything else.
So I pegged it 22 to 27 for the top guy. You're thinking it's going to be like a $41
bid. I'm ready to go higher than that. I mean, we saw a lot of those third or fourth round running backs. The David Johnson had a pretty good game. Melvin Gordon had a pretty mm-hmm. good game. Really the only one that was a letdown was the guy I drafted. Now I'm blanking his name, but like there's David Montgomery was kind of in that range too. Jonathan Taylor was a third or fourth round running back. So we were all anticipating, let's get that guy in the first round because we don't know what to do with those second round or RB2 guys. Well, really all of them did okay in relative to their value. Chris mm-hmm. Carson, another one example, 2 touchdown receptions. Mm-hmm. I think you want another running back right away. And when they are out there and available and look like they're going to have a role, whether it be Hines mm-hmm. or Brown for the foreseeable future, you should be trying to go ahead and get those.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a handful of receivers and then some kind of second-tier running backs. But, yeah, those three in whatever order you want to put it, you know, the Hines, Brown, Snell, those are your top three overall pickups for the week. No questions asked for me.
There was a few injury-related notes that we should probably mention. So starting first and foremost with Le'Veon Bell. Yeah, that was the guy I forgot to draft in the third or fourth, or that I forgot to mention in the third or fourth round. The only one of those guys to get injured, it looks like Bell is going to be out for potentially multiple weeks is what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Frank Gore is going to be stepping in as the starter this week. You know, it's 2020, so worse things could happen in this world. But Frank Gore is your starting running back in week two. Can't be what the plan is for the Jets. And I think taking the under on whatever points they score this week is probably a smart choice.
Yeah, I don't want to really mess with Jets from fantasy, but I don't know. Frank Gore continues to prove all of us in the community wrong year after year. He's only 4% owned, so you can absolutely go ahead and get him. I'm not really excited about Josh Adams, who had 13 snaps total and 2 carries total, but he would be kind of next in line if you're in your really, really deep league. LaMichael Perine was on the inactive list, so you know, you'd have to be in a 20-team league or more to really consider going out there. But you know, if you miss your bids on those top guys and want to throw like an $8 bid on Frank Gore, knowing it's probably going to be short-term utility and being ready to face frustration with this Jets offense, you don't pick up Frank Gore and think he's going to score, you know, 200 yards and 2 touchdowns. You pick him up because he's going to have like 15 carries for 60 yards or something like that on a good day, and hopefully we go with that. And then they have to move on to playing catch-up because of who their identity is as a team.
And they play the Niners this week. So, if you are mm-hmm. really into 2008 revenge game scenarios, maybe you're interested in Frank Gore against his former team in the 49ers. But I want absolutely nothing to do with any Jets in this scenario against the Niners defense. I don't know. But like if you're seeing a spot where you still need Frank Gore in week three against the Colts, okay. But again, Niners this week, Colts next week, Broncos week four, Cardinals week five. Of that stretch, maybe running back two utility out of Frank Gore could happen in week five. And at that point, maybe Le'Veon Bell's back. So great. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a starting running back. Great.
But guys, there's nothing wrong with my hamstrings.
That's what Adam Gase wants you to think, right?
Exactly. That's what Le'Veon Bell's tweeted himself. I know a lot of those from camp sort of resurfaced a little bit. We could talk a couple more backs, though. These are kind of honorable mentions, I guess you could say. Peyton Barber, he scored twice.
Great. Fantastic. Yep. I know Antonio Gibson lovers are just super thrilled to see Peyton Barber do goal line work despite really only getting 10 carries. Mm-hmm. He's also 4% owned. Again, the 2 touchdowns. We know what Peyton Barber is, and we've been saying that now for the past 2 years with mm-hmm. Buccaneers last year too, and yet he ends up being a fantasy asset.
There's a path. I mean, Gibson's role is going to grow. There's no doubt in my mind that that happens, but that eats into McKissick's role. Remember when their PR team, we have to remember their PR team released a depth chart and J.D. McKissick was the starter? Like one, you know, we'll write notes on that because it's news and whatnot, but really have to really look at that with a fine-tooth comb to take anything serious out of that. But J.D. McKissick, not effective. Only one of his 5 carries, only one of his 5 targets he caught, 3 carries for -2 yards. So Gibson's role will grow there. But does that mean Gibson suddenly, who lined up in the slot plenty of times, is going to get goal line carries? Yeah, probably not. So there's something here with Peyton Barber. I don't get excited about starting Peyton Barber as my RB2 or flex, but there are formats where he deserves a roster spot.
Yeah, especially in deeper leagues, and I imagine he'll be closer to 20% rostered by the end of this. Even with the guys that we've already mentioned already out there, you can't pick up all of them. So there's going to be some there's going to be some steps back. I think Barber in a 12 or 14 team league makes much more sense to be rostered.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Barber will get picked up in our stake league fab this week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, towards the end. It's only four or five running backs that really can be rostered, but you're right. That's a good point. The other name to note, Myles Gaskin had 63% of the snaps. Of course, if you had Myles Gaskin as your starting running back for the Dolphins, raise your hand because everyone was drafting Matt Breida or Jordan Howard. I was on the Breida side. Many were on the Howard side. Well, both of you are wrong because Myles Gaskin ends up being the primary factor and getting nine carries is not much, but once at the expense of Breida and Howard, who have much more name recognition, that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning because there are some deep leagues where someone like Myles Gaskin might get on the radar. I mean, okay, so I'm going to take this opportunity to plug Jerry's Hidden Statline article. He goes through every single, I believe it's free for week one too, so jump on that if you can because I'm pretty sure that'll go with the regular subscription package moving forward. But he goes through every single backfield in his article, and at the very beginning, he categorizes them into one, here are clear workhorse backfields. Here are 1A, 1B. Here are timeshares. Here are committees. And then at the very bottom, he puts, and here's Miami, by the way. He just puts it in in their absolute own category because that's what they are. I mean, they had four guys, even Patrick Laird sneaking in the mix. Like, who knows what the heck is going on here? Myles Gaskin had nine carries, a team high. So if anything, that worries me about my Breida Howard shares. I'm not ready to quite put him on my cut line yet. We threw out a lot of backs that are possible to cut. But again, there's a spot for Myles Gaskin in your 20-team league out there. That's why he's at the bottom. We've spent too much time talking about him already.
That's fine. Let's get a word from our sponsors, Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is a fantasy sports stock market on which you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. Ever heard someone say, I've had stock in X player since day one? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. You had stock in Patrick Mahomes in his rookie year? You knew this would happen? Well, now it's a reality. Create a portfolio of all your favorite athletes and get closer to the game than ever before. To get started, simply visit PredictionStrike.com and create an account. Then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would with real stock. Each game is like an earning report. If the player beats his projection, his stock moves up. It's just that easy. You can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Get started today by visiting PredictionStrike.com and sign up with the code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 with your first deposit of $20 or more. All right, so moving over to the wide receivers, tight ends. All right, we talk a lot about this Colts offense. Well, I mean, the Paris Campbells of the world actually ended up proving to be pretty good value. Robbie Anderson did some things, too, for the Panthers as well. Preston Williams now becomes maybe the guy for the Dolphins with Devontae Parker set to miss a few games. There's a lot. I mean, we mentioned all three of those guys last week as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. We were looking last week like, okay, here are some clear number two wide receivers that are under our 50% rostered threshold that are out there. And, I mean, there are plenty of waiver options, and I think most of these guys are going to have to be bid on as opposed to someone, you know, you wait until Fab runs and pick them up later. I'm really torn on my favorite here. I think the top, I've got three guys that I like the most, but there isn't a whole lot of separation between them. Of course, one being Preston Williams, 38% owned. Devontae Parker with that hamstring injury looks like he's going to miss multiple weeks. I mean, Preston Williams had 90% of the snaps and a team high seven targets against the Patriots. The only downside with Preston Williams, I like him plenty as a rest of season option, but this week he's got the Patriots. Last week he had the Patriots. This week he had Buffalo. Buffalo's a very good team. One of the better defenses in the league. I put them in the same vein as San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and not just in terms of fantasy, real life. And if Parker's out of the mix, Preston Williams gets more attention against the Bills. That's going to be tough. The other guy I mentioned, you know, earlier I alluded to maybe cutting bait with my Michael Pittman shares that might happen. And part of it is because Paris Campbell, excellent. He's only 22% rostered. He led all the pass catchers and snaps with 82.4% of them. And he tied for the team lead in targets with nine, finished with catching six of those for 71 yards. And he even ran the ball once for 9 yards. So that's an interesting little dynamic that boosts the fantasy floor a little bit. Those are two of the guys. And then, of course, Corey Davis, which we mentioned in our Monday Night Football discussion. Those are the three for me that I think have the most ceiling moving forward, rest of season. Definitely lower lower bids there than the running backs that we're talking about. But those are all players that I think should probably be rostered headed into week two, definitely in 14-team leagues and probably in most 12-team leagues as well.
So you'd have all three of those over Robbie Anderson, who did get 8 targets in the score, right?
Yeah. Robbie Anderson, 8 targets. He had 82.1% of his team's snaps. I think, obviously, Corey Davis has got... he's got A.J. Brown. Of course, Paris Campbell's got T.Y. Hilton. Robbie Anderson, I think that's going to be a little bit of a revolving door. He's going to be a player that you add or drop a bunch of times throughout the year, because I still think, you know, we'll see here as Teddy Bridgewater builds rapport with these receivers, but I still think D.J. Moore is the guy, and I've got some faith in Curtis Samuel still. So Robbie Anderson will have his big weeks, and then he might have his dud weeks too.
Yeah, Anderson probably makes much more sense in a best ball league, but you're not drafting him for a best ball league format at this point. You're seeing if you can pick him up and start him. And it's difficult. I can see a scenario where in a 12 team league, especially closer to bye week season, you're using him as a flex or something else like that. And
sure. You
might have to throw him out there. To me, he feels like a different looking version of DeSean Jackson. And DeSean Jackson has the opportunity to go for 150 yards and 5 catches any day of the week.
Yeah.
He also can do 3 for 15.
I only have one DJ Moore share among the leagues that I'm ending up like managing actively during the season. And I think I might sneak him at Robbie Anderson as my last bench spot, just because, well, if DJ Moore goes down, then I've at least got a team's wide receiver 1AB-ish type that I can slot in there, because we're starting 3 receivers and there's a flex. And I don't think the cost will be very high to grab him this week.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, relative to all the running back names out there and the wide receivers you already mentioned, he still feels like he's fourth to me out much. I mean, Preston Williams is a very clear number one overall. I think people are going to overreact to Corey Davis and his big game.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe he can do things in his contract year that you weren't anticipating. Yeah. But the Titans' offense normally isn't going to be throwing 40 times. So there's after that.
There's a reason Preston Williams, out of all of these guys, is already the highest owned. He was 38% when I made this outline yesterday. He's probably closer to 50% now. And he's a guy, again, not this week, but he's a guy that we wanted to have on your radar last week, and he's someone that could help you the whole season, especially in these next couple weeks without Parker.
Let's get to some wide receiver names that are probably more in the vein of 12 to 14, be even deeper leagues than that. Laviska Shenault had a touchdown in his rookie debut. He played 62% of the snaps. DJ Chark, Keenan Cole did some things. Keenan Cole, I get it. Again, 3 for 4 on his target and then 34 yards to score. I don't know. I mean, he kind of did. They very clearly were working him in the offense, using him as some running back packages as well, just like Paris Campbell. I think Jacksonville's going to have to pass the ball more often than we saw in week one. So maybe there's possible junk time production, much like Chark had last year with the Jaguars. What's your read on him? Are you in a deeper format interested in him, or are you going to be kind of fading him and letting your guys that you drafted be more of a reason?
Yeah, Shenault absolutely intrigues me. I mean, DJ Chark is the number one on this team, but I think Chark can maybe cut into Keelan Cole's volume a little bit as he as the season goes on and he continues to adjust to the speed of the league. He only had 4 targets, but again, you have to remember Minshew only threw 20 passes, and they had 50 offensive plays. Is that what I said earlier, or something like that? So there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to go around, but he was still productive within that situation. And he lined up in the backfield on 3 plays. He carried the balls twice for 10 yards. And he had 1 direct snap. So they're designing plays around him for this rookie in this COVID year that apparently, you know, no rookies have had all that many reps. So I think Shenault's your sneaky guy that you can maybe throw $2-3 bid in there and keep on your bench. And he could be a difference maker, you know, kind of in this class. I think one of the 14-team auctions that I did, that was it was on the Sunday before the opening Thursday, I got Shenault for $1 at the end, and I'm very happy with that. Definitely not cutting bait with him yet, because I think obviously he's a rookie, so he's far from reached his ceiling, but he's kind of a sneaky guy just because I like the creative ways he's getting used in this offense.
How about another rookie, Quintez Cephas, 10 targets, our Wisconsin guy for the Lions, led the team, I think, along with Danny Amendola for the Lions as far as throws out there. Of course, Galladay didn't play against the Bears. I believe he was out. He was ruled out week one.
He was ruled out entirely with the hamstring injury. We don't know necessarily. We don't have much on him heading into week two just yet. So the thing with that is, yeah, Cephus had 10 targets, and I would absolutely – he didn't do a ton with it, but I'd absolutely look into Cephus again if Galladay has to miss, because that volume is something that absolutely cannot be ignored. And, of course, in that same vein, Danny Amendola, the number 13 graded wide receiver on Pro Football Focus this week. So both of those guys are kind of in play because, you know, the Lions are going to be in competition for the number one draft pick, probably going to be passing in the second half. Both of those guys, I mean, one for volume and one because, you know, he's there and he's fine. I mean, I think Marvin Jones actually, he gets over our threshold. I'm sure he's owned enough. Yeah, he's 89%. So, you know, you're looking at other passing options on that offense. And I don't know, if Galladay's out, I'd cut Kerryon Johnson for Quintez Cephus, because I think Cephus could have more volume in that situation.
If Galladay comes back, are you completely out on Cephus? Like, is he not worth the time? Basically a Benny Snell version at wide receiver?
Yeah, you'd have to have a pretty deep bench to want to hang on to him. He's kind of a plug and play. I love him in dynasty leagues. He was absolutely taken in our staff 14 teamer, you know, as he should be. It was odd that he went so low in the draft. You know, he had that random year off in college, but like physically, he's got a body type of almost like AJ Brown, where he looks like he's ready to be in this league right away. And so it wasn't all that surprising to see him get the volume, but you know, Stafford missed a couple of those throws, and then you've got, you know, your general rookie stuff in there.
I think there's a lot of names at wide receiver you're already picking up, but I'm actually fine saying Cephus should be a part of that conversation regardless if Galladay is playing or not. I'm not a huge fan of Danny Amendola. He certainly has his role in the offense, and he has a repertoire with Matthew Stafford, so that matters. But I think Cephus is going to be a decent enough guy. Like Russell Gage, for example, for the Falcons, and the Falcons offense is a different thing altogether, especially in their junk time production. But we can't understate this enough, how bad the Lions are going to be this year. And there's going to be a lot of passing opportunities. So even the number three, number four wide receiver in a bad situation could be a fantasy relevant guy quite a bit. So I think I'm okay with Cephus. And I was already extending the reasons to play for Frank Gore in his 2008 revenge game against the 49ers. Well, how about a homecoming against the Packers this week in Wisconsin, right? I mean, you could see a scenario.
If it's anything like what Tyler Herro did to the Bucks in the playoffs, then apparently.
You could see a scenario where Cephus gets four catches, 50 yards, and you're fine with that 9 points, even in the bench scenario.
I got one more wild card for you to look at. How about Tre'Quan Smith? You know, Michael Thomas says he's going to play through a high ankle sprain. Yeah, okay. Yeah, everyone says they're going to try to play. You know, I'm going to try to play in the NFL this weekend. You know, I'm going to go try out and be the Packers' next kicker. But, like, that's not going to happen. Right. I mean, if the Saints are smart at all, he's going to sit. Emmanuel Sanders already is like 80, 90% owned. So he's going to be the guy, and he, you know, definitely shoots up in the rankings. But where do you throw a guy like Tre'Quan Smith? For me, it's more of a DFS tournament play in case he booms that 1 week, because it's going to be really tough to rely on him in a fantasy matchup. But he's in the mix.
I think I'm perversely interested to see what the Saints offense would look like without Michael Thomas, because everyone likes to make the argument that he's not a top five wide receiver, right? Like if you want to troll anybody at your bar and you're like, hey, who are the top five wide receivers? You just make sure Michael Thomas isn't in the list, and then somebody gets mad out of the equation, and then there's a bar fight somewhere. That's how it always goes. But Tre'Quan Smith, I mean, like if he ends up sliding in to the Michael Thomas role, what does that look like? Is Michael Thomas really the true feature wide receiver? Is he talented enough to get open and get involved? Or can Tre'Quan Smith do Michael Thomas stuff? Because anybody can in the Saints.
In terms of a possession receiver, I really think you know, it's Emmanuel Sanders that handles more of that type of role. He's going to be the guy that's moving the chains a little bit. But you know, looking the first couple of years of Tre'Quan Smith in the league, 9.7 and 9.4 yards per target. Of course, granted, it's a smaller sample size. I think Tre'Quan Smith, that's the reason why I said DFS tournament play, because he's very, very more than capable of making a big play. Of course, he only got one target in week one here, but look at his next 3 weeks at Las Vegas, home against the Packers, at Detroit. Those are three bottom 10 pass or defenses against opposing receivers. Obviously, again, we have a week one sample size, but nothing scares me about those defenses right there. So if you are in a deep league and need a flex, you know, maybe shoot for the stars, try to hit a home run with a guy like Tre'Quan Smith.
I actually like Tre'Quan Smith as a pickup more than I do Preston Williams. And this is more of a just this week thing, because I think the Buffalo defense is going
to
be hard.
You have to,
I like him more than Preston Williams. I like him more than Corey Davis, who we mentioned as well, too. I think he's maybe like a top four wide receiver pickup overall. And this is under the assumption that Michael Thomas is not playing this week. There's no reason for him to play against the Raiders.
Yeah. You never know.
That's why.
You never know, because owners are going to be as active as they ever will be all season on the week one waivers here. That's why I have to be competitive with these bids. But you might be able to sneak Tre'Quan Smith in a 12-team league with a $0 or $1 bid. He could probably fall under the radar there.
I think it's possible. I think Laviska Shenault at number three or four, and then Tre'Quan Smith after is about it. Anthony Miller doesn't quite fit our criteria. Mm-hmm. He was at 56% owned as of this podcast. However, he should probably be more like 90% owned since he was the third highest PFF grade wide receiver this week.
He had a very quiet first half and wasn't really getting targets. Then he kind of came alive in the second half and was a huge part of that Bears comeback. I just put a bullet point with some of the grades here. I mean, Anthony Miller was the third highest. I mentioned Willie Snead was the sixth highest, you know, in the Ravens wide receiver here. So, you know, a couple of guys. Obviously, Anthony Smith is someone that I kind of liked. I definitely didn't get very many shares of him just because of where in the draft I was usually trying to scramble to address other needs, or I'm not even going to make excuses. I should have gotten a couple more shares of Anthony Smith. He'll be viable
Miller,
for
Anthony Miller.
Anthony Miller. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. I'm still on Tre'Quan Smith. I'm looking at that bullet point right above. But no, he'll be, I think he's their wide receiver too, and he'll be viable as long as Trubisky is decent. But in that statement, there's, you know, there's a little bit of variability.
I mean, this doesn't really factor into the waiver wire portion of the podcast necessarily, but I'm not sure if you're aware, Allen Robinson removed all Bears affiliation from his Instagram, Twitter, and social media feeds.
Well, yeah, so did Giannis this weekend, but
how Giannis is leaving. I've been told by ESPN that Giannis is going to go to the Los Angeles Lakers and Clippers all at the same time and play for only big markets. So if that's the case, Allen Robinson's he's gone. And there's no way he sticks around with the Bears anymore. I don't know. It was interesting for Robinson to do that this week, when he basically had to sit through all preseason of knowing, oh God, this is going to be bad, feels weird to me.
Yeah, no, I don't put a whole lot of stock
there's
in that.
There's going to be that's some podcast
looking,
that does.
Somebody is looking for ours. A story, for sure. Yeah, I mean, sure. Okay, so moral of the story here, Anthony Miller, type him in first if you're looking for a wide receiver, but chances are he's going to be owned. You know? Would he be number one on this whole list among pickups?
Yeah, I think so. I just assume there's no league.
And that has nothing to
not.
Do with Allen Robinson's right. Instagram. That has everything to do with Anthony Miller, even with Robinson being there. So, you know, if the conspiracy is true and it wasn't, you know, how many of these guys do you think are actually running their own Instagrams? You know, is that not a PR person or an agent or something like
that's,
that?
That's a good point.
So,
I
hate hearing these stories because people want to overvalue and overplay them. Anthony Miller is good not because of what Allen Robinson did in his Instagram.
All right. That's fair. We talked about a lot of wide receivers. Who are we dropping from this group? Michael Pittman, you mentioned.
Yep.
Mecole Hardman, I've seen a lot of people on Ask an Expert and RotoWire be like, oh, what do I do with him? Well, you were drafting Hardman because he would be great if Hill or Watkins or anybody was out. None of them are out, so don't expect value from him right now.
You figure in when the Chiefs are in competitive games, he'll get some deep ball shares. You know, when they're in more competitive games where they have to, throw the entire time and they're not, you know, just kind of protecting the ball for the whole fourth quarter, then Hardman might get more of a role because I agree. It's going to be minimal. Watkins looked great. He looked great on Thursday. We haven't chatted about this, but like when the inevitable Watkins injury happens, or even before then, that's why I have like four Mecole Hardman shares.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for other players to drop if I'm going to try to get a Preston Williams or a Paris Campbell. I'm still keeping Hardman.
Well, I was going to bring up Bryan Edwards. I love Bryan Edwards quite a bit, rookie wide receiver for the Raiders. We've had a lot of different people on the RotoWire station talk about him as well. I know Mario and John are huge fans of his game. One catch despite Ruggs being out for at least half the game.
One target.
Like, I mean, that's not good, especially in a game where it was a shootout with the Panthers throughout. I'm cutting bait with Edwards, especially if like I'll pick up Cephas over Edwards. Mm-hmm. I'm picking up Shenault over Edwards. That's a red flag for me. So
pick up Nelson Agholor over Edwards.
Yeah, I'm not going down that far.
Maybe
but
not that far.
You're right.
I mean, he scored in his debut and it was only had one target. But hey, Nelson Agholor had just as many targets as Edwards did.
Right. Yeah. So that was a tough blow for me to see as a huge Edwards fan. No way I'm going to be going that direction. Yeah. There's a lot of other names I'd be picking up instead.
What if you're in a shallower league and you saw how much Kyler Murray leaned on DeAndre Hopkins? Do you consider maybe Christian Kirk can't really cut it this year?
No, I think I'm still using Kirk because I think the Cardinals are going to be passing a lot. If anything, I actually feel encouraged about my Kirk shares because there's just no way possible Hopkins gets thrown that much. Like there's got to be a defensive overreaction to it.
Bad quarterbacks have made livings on feeding Hopkins that much. And not that that's Murray, but you know, if it can work for, you know, those kind of guys, you know, if it can work for Matt Schaub or whatever, it can definitely work for Murray. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I respect the San Francisco defense as one of the better ones in the league, even though Murray had an exceptional fantasy game. Five targets, only one catch for 0 yards is a little bit worrisome. I don't think I'm willing to drop Kirk for any of those guys that we mentioned that are out there. But again, my hesitancy to do that has cost me in the past.
I'll say this. The Cardinals always seem to have the 49ers number, at least the past two seasons. If you remember last year, the Kenyon Drake breakout game happened against the 49ers on a Thursday night game, a different contest. They also scored like 30 plus points or 20 plus points against the Niners when their defense had been good all season long. So whatever the reason it is, Cliff Kingsbury, not a great head coach, but if he played against the 49ers 16 games in the season, maybe he has a positive winning record out of that. So let's move on to the tight ends. It was really the death blow to a very bad fantasy week for me. The love of my life, Blake Jarwin, is done for the season after tearing his ACL for the Cowboys. Dalton Schultz is now technically your starter, but if anything, this is going to be a boost up to CeeDee Lamb,
yes,
who I think gets bailed out, quite frankly, from a fantasy perspective. There is a reason why I never drafted Lamb anywhere this year. Cooper had 10-plus targets. We saw Gallup factor in the offense. Lamb was going to do some things. Ezekiel Elliott was a pass catcher, too. And Jarwin. There's no way a third wide receiver does well. Well, okay. Now Jarwin's out. I think you're going to see Schultz and somebody else just do blocking stuff, and that helps Lamb the most out of any of the
exactly.
Options.
I don't really think of Schultz, you know, going down the depth chart. We've got Blake Bell and Sean McEwen. Really nothing interests me among any of that group. If anything, CeeDee Lamb, wearing the Dez Bryant number out there, he's big and physical enough to kind of play a tight end role a little bit. So I think you'll see him line up tight a little bit and you know, maybe try to slip some safeties in there. It helps CeeDee Lamb. It doesn't really help any Cowboys tight ends.
Dawson Knox had the fourth best PFF grade. Only had three targets, though. That's why it's like, okay, cool. You have these awesome grades for PFF. Do a lot of great jobs. But from a fantasy perspective, does that really help us? Jordan Atkins, he caught both of his targets for 39 yards. But it was actually Daniel Fells. That was, I think, the more targeted tight end out of the two during that Thursday night game. I'll bring up two names that I actually am really interested to hear from, and you don't have
a machine. I had a really hard time coming up with tight ends, so I'm curious to see where you go with this.
You're probably going to be like, oh, duh. You're going to be really angry about this first one because we've had this conversation like 5 weeks last year. O.J. Howard caught the touchdown pass from Tom Brady. He got more targets than Gronkowski, played more snaps than Gronkowski. My friend Dylan McGee, who I do a RotoWire online championship NFFC draft, he sniffed this out from the very beginning. He said O.J. Howard was going to be more the feature guy as opposed to Gronk, and it wasn't even an injury thing with Gronk. Howard was out there and was a factor. We know Brady loves to use his tight ends. He's only 18% owned in Yahoo. I am picking up Howard every single place instead of Jarwin, who I have a lot of Blake Jarwin shares of. I think Howard's going to be a top 10 fantasy tight end this year.
Yeah, I can't believe I missed that, and that's an excellent pick here. I'm looking at we have a team trends page. It's under stats in our main navigation on RotoWire. It's one of my most helpful pages that I look at to prepare this. It's what Jerry uses to prepare that excellent hidden stat line column, of course. So looking at the team trends pages, Gronk was on the field for 77.1% of snaps, O.J. Howard for 52.9% of snaps, and Cameron Brate for only 10%. So that part definitely isn't in question. We know what's going on there. And then I'm going to shift the navigation over to the targets part, and we have got I'm going to look at it as a count here. That would be 6 for Howard and only 3 for Gronk. So, you know, that alone leads me to believe that that you're right. I'm going to buy that.
I don't have the data pulled up in front of me. I know you do. The most important thing with those snaps here, okay, Gronk outsnapped Howard. I believe Howard ran more routes than Gronk, or at least ran a similar amount of routes to Gronk. So like when Howard was out there, he was the pass-catching guy as opposed to Gronk, where Gronk was doing blocking stuff. Am I correct with that? I watched most of the game.
Ooh, I just found a bug. Our tight end route data isn't quite ready for 2020.
Okay.
I'm gonna turn that over soon. But we do have that also under the stats navigation. We're going to talk to Tech and get that up and running for you. But that's another good tool to use because, yeah, I agree. I think of Gronk more of the blocker in that situation.
I was setting a lot of my waiver wire claims this week already in preparation for it. And I ended up having Malcolm Brown, number one combination of Paris Campbell or any of those receivers, number two. OJ Howard was number three, and I can't tell if it's because I have so many Blake Jarwin shares that I need to make up something for tight end. I really, really believe in Howard this year with Tom Brady as the quarterback. We know Gronk's injury history, and the fact in week one that they couldn't get Gronk involved. I know it's the Saints defense and they're okay sometimes. I just am – I think that's one of my top five pickups this week, and there's a lot of really good ones. Mm-hmm. So I want to stress again, OJ Howard is a guy that you need to be looking out for.
If anything, yeah, the Saints defense is excellent, and there's more room to grow there. And granted, I think Mike Thomas will get a lot more of those targets eventually, you know, when he's maybe less injured and doesn't have Lattimore in his face all game.
I shouldn't be hyping up Howard as much as I am, because there is a second tight end, and you already talked about Jerry Donabedian in his article. That's been great. There was only one person in the entire fantasy community out there that was saying, go get Logan Thomas as your tight end number two. Well, look and behold, he had a team high eight targets for the Washington franchise, four catches, 37 yards, and a touchdown. Terry McLaurin didn't do anything. It was Logan Thomas, who I think could actually be a really, really good fantasy tight end this year for Washington. What does really good mean? Okay. Mm-hmm. Top 12, top 14. We already know the TJ Hockenson's, Austin Hooper's of the world. If you lost Njoku, who was placed on injured reserve, if you lost Blake Jarwin and you don't want to go that OJ Howard route, you've been burned too many times before, I don't blame you. Mm-hmm. I think Logan Thomas actually is a guy that gets 40 catches and 500 yards or something like that and could be a crucial red zone threat for a team that really lacks that offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at 6'6", 250, big body, someone that you never really thought of as a pass catcher before. His career high in receptions is 16. That was last year with Detroit. Been kind of a journeyman, you know.
He was a former quarterback, which I think is why we never really transitioned to see him as a tight end before. Finally got that work a little bit with Detroit last season. Buffalo was working him into that capacity too. I just like the skill set is there. If he can be a route running pass catcher, that's a big deal. And again, Terry McLaurin, Steven Sims, who I liked quite a bit. We talked about last podcast. That's it. Do you know who the backup is to Logan Thomas right now?
I didn't even have it up, but it's probably not good.
His name is Jeremy Sprinkle.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like I remember that guy. Jeremy Sprinkle is the backup. If there's somebody in the NFL
Not Jordan Reed? No,
if there's somebody in the league that's name is Sprinkle and is your backup, you can more or less assume you're going to probably be a decent fantasy starter starter in the office. Bow. Yes. 52 snaps, Logan Thomas playing. I'm just saying.
74%. That's fine.
Thomas and Howard, I think, are actually in the top five, mm-hmm. both for fantasy pickups. And you're going to be going after the running backs and wide receivers. So you might be able to sneak both in there. And I think you're going to have fantasy utility for much of the season.
Yeah. I have an easier time, you know, digesting Howard if I need a tight end. If I really need a tight end, I'll probably put a bigger bid on him and maybe a small bid on Thomas, because I just don't see very many weeks moving forward where Thomas like gets into the top 12 overall.
It'll probably matter more in week 7, 8, 9 when there's just like a mad rush of bye week teams. Mm-hmm. So you're probably not starting him very often. Certainly, I don't know, like if you really feel comfortable going against the Cardinals and assume like last year, the Cardinals defense, or really multiple years, they've been so bad at tight end. I don't know if it's the case this year. George Kittle was more or less shut down, but was that because of injury? We'll find out in week two. I'm not saying you should necessarily start him. Cardinals week two, Browns week three, Ravens week four. That's the first time I'll probably say, I'm not sure he gets you tight end two utility.
Speaking of George Kittle, and actually speaking of Jordan Reed, like, so George Kittle has a knee sprain. We don't necessarily know, are super clear on his status. But what is there any, I mean, Jordan Reed and Ross Dwelly are next up. This is obviously a run first offense. Jordan Reed caught both of his targets for 12 yards Sunday. I mean, does he sneak onto here? Probably more than, you know, your Knox and your Schultz types.
Yeah, it's tough. More often than not, when someone gets injured, you're like, all right, don't play. It's fine, right? Michael Thomas, there's no way he could play in a high ankle sprain. Kittle, throughout his career, has already played on just ridiculous injuries he shouldn't be. I think this probably qualifies. I just don't see a scenario where Kittle doesn't play.
And he's already got paid, so there's less risk to going out there and really hurting yourself.
It's just him. I think that's just what George Kittle does, is that he's going to go out there and play even when he shouldn't. So if he's out, I mean, look at the pass catchers the Niners have. There's not many. I could definitely see Jordan Reed having some factor, but I would much rather have both Logan Thomas and OJ Howard, even in the scenario that Kittle is out. And I just don't see that way that Kittle's not playing Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I buy it for sure.
All right, let's get to the defensive streamers real quick here. We had the Buccaneers going against the Panthers, Packers against the Lions. You could pick either under or either or for the Bengals Browns Thursday night game. Is there any of those guys or any of those teams I mentioned that you're interested in?
Yeah, it's Tampa Bay, and I always thought it was funny because I always use our draft software to do drafts, and you know, but team defenses. You know, the rankings are so arbitrary, so I like to maybe see what the consensus rankings and the ADP and stuff like that are. And our draft software was always having Tampa Bay come up as a top option. So the guys behind the scenes list Jerry, you know, Jim Mario, you know, there was something there that, you know, that had them ranked that highly. And they came out and, you know, obviously they lost the game to the Saints, one of the better offenses in the league. But as someone who started Drew Brees in a couple places, he did not have a good fantasy game. So Tampa Bay is in there. They're available at 24%. They're the home team technically, which doesn't matter as much this week. And they're against the Panthers. So it's tough. You got to deal with McCaffrey, but you also have to deal with Bridgewater and apparently a non-scary group of wide receivers there. So Tampa Bay is number one for me.
I'll disagree. I actually think that Panthers offense is good enough from a junk time production standpoint that I would be going after the Packers every single time instead with face the Lions this week.
I'm trying to take my Packers blinders off the best I can. Maybe I'm overcompensating.
It really isn't that, and I get it. The Vikings scored 34 points. Really, I believe there's going to be turnovers that happen. Jair Alexander was a playmaker against the Vikings in week one. He had the safety, else he had the pick. The Packers defense is going to allow yardage and points. That's just going to happen. But what I really believe in, and especially in week two of this home game for them, is that they're going to be having sacks. Certainly that Lions offensive line is not very good, and they're going to be able to shut down the running game enough. Now, the only concern is that the Packers' nightmare scenario for the last 12 years, Adrian Peterson, could have another vintage performance like he even did week one and get 94 rushing yards again. I really think that I think Peterson's kaput, despite what we saw week one. Kerryon Johnson didn't do a lot. If Galladay doesn't play, Galladay normally is a nightmare for the Packers too.
Yeah,
I would much rather have the Packers, assuming we're going to get some sacks and turnovers, as opposed to the Buccaneers, who could allow this similar junk time production that we could see from the Lions to the Panthers without those kind of pluses.
I don't know. I'm sticking to Tampa Bay if they're around, and Green Bay's in the mix. You know, Jerry's article's out. He doesn't even have Green Bay in the top five. He's got them down at, 12, so startable, I guess, if you need to. And then, let's see, what else do I have here? We talked about Cleveland-Cincinnati on Thursday night. I mean, take your pick. That game's going to be one of the lowest over-unders of the week. Baker Mayfield can't throw a pass with any degree of accuracy. Maybe he wakes up dangerous Thursday morning, but seemingly unlikely. And then you've got the rookie on the other side. So you can probably take your pick out of that if you need defense, because neither of those two are going to be owned if you do need a one-week option.
Yeah, I'll take the Packers over them too. I actually think Burrow is going to have a pretty good game, and I think Baker Mayfield is going to have a pretty good game. I think that's...
What about, can Gardner Minshew keep it up? Because the guy that I jotted down and that Jerry's got as well, you know, Jerry puts them down, they're like 50-51% in Yahoo, but only 22% in ESPN leagues. That's the Tennessee Titans. I like the Buccaneers. Their opponent implied total is 20. The Titans' opponent implied total is 16.25 right now, based on the spread here. And, you know, again, this is a Jaguars team that everyone thinks is taking. Minshew had a great game on Sunday, but if you don't believe that last for whatever reason, you know, there's not much of a running game threat to speak of there. Some of the receivers are good, sure, but the Titans looked good last night, and they seem like they could look good again.
I could get behind the Titans. I actually could get behind the Titans before the Buccaneers. So this is maybe I have faith I shouldn't have in this Panthers offense, and they scored 30 points against the Raiders, who we knew weren't going to be very good entering this year. I don't know.
The Panthers have good players, but the Saints, in my mind, are way better than the Panthers, and the Bucs handled the Saints pretty well. I mean, they limited, I'm looking at, you know, some of the things that Jerry brings up in his article. They limited Breeze to 5.3 yards per attempt.
He throws 5.5 yards per attempt.
Fair
anyway.
Enough.
I mean,
their rushing attack with Kamara and Murray, you know, and anyone else they want to line up back there, 2.4 yards per carry. Remember the Saints, they only scored 17 points on drives they started in their own territory. So they basically relied on, you know,
their
defense. Their defense created turnovers to score points. And of course, they had that pick six. So keep that in mind when you look at how many points Tampa Bay actually gave up in that game. And then the other thing that Jerry brings up here, which is awesome, the next 2 weeks they've got Drew Lock and Tyrod Taylor afterwards. So if you're trying to look ahead and maybe not have to stream in weeks three and four, that'll probably put Tampa Bay up there.
I'll give you that. Yeah, you're right. And the Packers, I think, have they have the difficult matchup a little bit later on in this. I think week three, they're probably a startable defense too. But I'm not remembering what their schedule looks like.
I worry about the Packers defense. Yeah, they can get some turnovers, but at this point, it might offset the negative points they get by giving up 30 points.
We're gonna end the 6-minute defensive streaming conversation with our first Culver's board bet of the day. Board bet of the season. I'll take the Packers defense to score more fantasy points than the Tampa Bay defense.
Tampa Bay defense against. Okay, you're on.
All right, there you go. There's our first Culver's board bet of the Tuesday RotoWire podcast, and that really ends it, I think, for the Tuesday RotoWire podcast.
What scoring system are we going to use?
Oh God, we're going to do this. You're going to pull out your protractor and nitpick me on this.
Well, I mean, it's two matchups. They're going to be similar, and it's going to depend on what negative positive you're giving for yards and points allowed.
This is the Yahoo focused fantasy podcast. Let's do Yahoo scoring for these
standard Yahoo scoring.
Yes.
Do they give or take points allowed?
I don't think so.
I'm trying to think of the only league that we're both in together is probably Vegas League. We can just use that.
All right, fine. Uh-huh. All right, we'll use our Yahoo and then we're going off the 50% owner's rate. Fine, whatever, or roster rate.
As much as I'm sure everyone here wants to listen to us talk through our bets. But finally getting one on the board.
All right, good. Well, that concludes it for the Tuesday free agent portion of the podcast. Again, stay tuned. Wednesday, Jeff always has a great guest on. And then Thursday, John Amari, I'm sure, going to have plenty of action to talk about getting you set for week two. Scott. Andrew Laird, always great DFS listens as well for the Friday podcast. Really, the RotoWire podcast network is great. So keep tuned to everything on tap for the rest of this week.
Yeah, subscribe, unsubscribe, rate and review if you can. We still very much appreciate all that stuff. Of course, you follow us on Twitter, if you'd like for more. We'll always be the first. And I like to, send out retweet and all the content from the rest of our awesome football staff as well.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.